Nugent from the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Did not see that one coming. Again, great protection. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker, touchdown.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Second and 25, Mike. Second and 25. It'll live with me forever, I think. That just... you just talk. I don't know what to say.
Kind of. It reminds me of the second and 17 in the Grey Cup a couple of years ago against the Riders. You know, they look like they might be making a little comeback. I think they were down by two touchdowns at the time. And then they do a draw play to Corey Sheets, and he runs off to get about 17 and a half yards to the first down and really took the air out of the Ticats. And, you know, I think this one's worse because it was just... You know, second and 20, I suppose we're gonna get into it as we go through the game, but it was just such a letdown because right before that play, you know, it was pretty much, we had the game in our hands with Nadon dropping that interception. He should have had it, and we would have had the ball in field goal range with about a minute and some odd seconds left. So just going, you know, I screamed as soon as that happened. I screamed yes and then no because, you know, I thought for sure he caught the ball and then he just dropped it. So two heartbreaking plays in a row.
Yeah, and second and 25. Like, my God, all they had to do was knock the ball down. And I don't know what the hell Ed Gainey was doing on that play, but he, like, trips and falls, and then Davis can't make the tackle, and Ellingson's in the end zone. I never say teams deserve better than what they get because deserves is not the right word. The Ticats didn't deserve to win this game. They played exceptionally well, and I think the guy we got to start with is Jeremiah Masoli, who was, he was incredible on Sunday. Yeah. He was always considered a liability for this team, and he came in and not just ran the ball well, but he outperformed Henry Burris in the passing game as well. Like, he was just awesome.
Yeah, he was amazing. Yeah, you know, when he went down there, he was out for a series, I believe. I was, you know, I thought, oh, okay, this game's over because, you know, he was just performing so well that, you know, Harris coming to the game, he's just not going to even come close to that amount of production. He was just, his passes were, you know, he was pretty much perfect all game. You know, he had over 300 yards passing and a couple touchdowns, and he looked so accurate and poised and determined, and he really, really impressed me this game. I did not expect that performance at all.
No, absolutely not. I expected maybe them to run the ball a lot, and they did it at the beginning. Did you notice they were running the, like, the literal not the read option, the actual option, where they would have both, like, that was incredible.
Yeah, that worked well.
It did, and Gable wasn't hugely involved in the game, either rushing or receiving, but Masoli was just so on fire and so on point. Like, his numbers, 30 of 42 for 349 yards and two touchdowns. He did have an interception, but that interception in the long run meant nothing because I'm fairly certain after the pick, the Ticats forced a 2-and-out and got the ball back, so all it really cost them was field position. Going into this game, I figured they would have to pound the ball and control the clock to win, and that's what they did at first. I think at the end of the first quarter, it was Ottawa was leading, I believe, I think the Ticats were leading at the end of the first quarter, and they had something like a 10 minutes to 5 minutes advantage in time of possession. They executed a game plan to perfection, but it was these little mistakes that cost them the game. Tyquan Underwood, who had, for all intents and purposes, a really good game, led the team in receiving yards, had the beautiful long bomb touchdown where he made the Ottawa defender look foolish on that double move. But late in the second quarter, he catches a pass 7 yards on a second and 10 and steps out of bounds, costing the team time on the clock.
Yeah.
Very next play, they're punting from a little bit inside their end zone, and I know that they were going into the wind, but they concede a safety. And then they kick off to Ottawa, they get a good return, and Ottawa gets a field goal, 5-point swing. You mentioned the Nadon miss on the interception. That could have changed the game. It was these tiny, tiny mistakes that the team just could not have in this game if they were going to win that ended up costing them a chance to go to the Grey Cup again.
Yeah, I was really scratching my head when Underwood went out of bounds there. He just has to be aware of what's going on in the game, you know, how much time's left in the second half or in the first half. And that mistake really hurts. Like you said, a 5-point swing, that take that away, and we could have just needed a field goal to to win the game. So at the end of it, so it's tough, and it's a tough pill to swallow, this game. But you know, if you're just looking at it as a CFL fan, it was one hell of a game. It was a classic. If that play was for us, that catch, the Ellingson play, you know, we'd be, you know, freaking out. Obviously, it was for the other team, but I think this game will go down as an all-time classic playoff game.
I think you're 100% right. And it's funny because going into the weekend, the assumption was that this game would be a bit of a snoozer. Everyone kind of thought Ottawa would beat the brakes off the Ticats. And in the other game, in the West semi, that would be the tight, classic, close game. And it was the reverse. Edmonton pretty much pounded Calgary up until the very end when Calgary made it a little interesting. But this game to me was a back-and-forth contest that, like I said, came down to tiny mistakes. And unfortunately, those mistakes were made by the Ticats, but you're right, this was an absolute classic, and maybe when we get a little distance from it, I'll be able to look at it more objectively, but it's just so... Another season ends with a heartbreaking playoff loss, and I just don't know how many more of these I can take.
Yeah, it's 93 yards, it's just ridiculous, you know, that play, and Ellingson, you know, just burning us, the former Ticat. I know Burrs is a former Ticat, too. There's lots of former Ticats on the Ottawa, on the Red Blacks. So, you know, I just, going back to that play, when he tossed that ball up in the air, I swore that it was either going to be picked or knocked down, because Ganey had pretty good position on it, and then he, you know, falls down like a bozo, and then, you know, it's just like, I don't understand how that happened, but it did, and, it, you know, when it happened, I didn't even, you know, when the Don play happened and he dropped the ball, I yelled through the roof. But on this one, I just, you know, basically just calmly said, oh my God, like, what happened? Bleep that out, I guess. But it was just, I don't know what to say about that play other than I swore he had it when the ball was in the air.
It's funny because I'm sitting watching the game and I say to everyone around me, right as Ottawa's about to take the field, after the Ticats had just tied it on a spectacular throw and catch from Mazzoli to Luke Tasker. That was one of the catches of the year. Luke Tasker seems to make these catches every week. You know what I mean? He makes the extraordinary look ordinary, and man, am I happy he's here. But right before Ottawa is about to take the field, I said, this is the perfect time now for Henry Burris to make the boneheaded play. If they get a little pressure, he's going to throw in his, like, picks. I said, pick six. This is the time for a pick six to kill this team. And happened. It happened. And he just didn't catch the ball. He was probably going to score. And I'm wondering if maybe that was in his head. He saw all the green grass in front of him and is thinking, oh my God, I'm going to win this team the game. And it just hits off his hands and hits the turf. And it's like, crap. But then I'm thinking, you know, second and 25 because of the absolutely disgusting low block that was put on Ted Laurent. That, funny enough, I haven't heard Henry Burris come out and talk about Jamichael Dean needing to be taken out of the game or how he shouldn't be playing in the CFL because of that low block. Laurent gets taken out on that, so they get the 15-yard penalty, and you're thinking, okay, second and 25. Teams don't pick up second and 25 that easy, and, like, you gotta think, what the f***?
Yeah, and even if they gained, you know, 15 yards, they still punt the ball. There's still over a minute left, plenty of time to march into field goal range and win this game. But that's not how it turned out. So on to next year, I guess. We have a lot to look forward to, but it's just tough to think about next year at this point.
And with the way the offense was playing at that point in the game and throughout the entire game, I had no doubt in my mind that when they received the punt, that they were going to march downfield and Medlock was going to kick the winner again. There was no doubt in my mind that was going to happen. But then the touchdown happens, and I feel like just the wind was taken out of their sails. And this team fought hard all year. This team dealt with adversity after adversity after adversity. It was just not meant to be, unfortunately. And the Red Blacks are headed to Winnipeg for the Grey Cup. And yeah, it's going to be a long off season. But like you said, there is stuff to look forward to. This team is not going to be... They're not going back to those years where they suck. We're going to get into it in a little bit about the amount of free agents that this team has and how different this team's going to look next season. But I still have all the confidence that they'll be able to get back into a playoff spot, maybe even win the division, and be in the championship conversation once again. I don't think we have to worry about these guys going back to the 4-14 seasons that we've seen in the past. And that kind of takes the sting out of this loss after waiting a couple days to get on the horn with you and have a chance to talk about it. But it's going to eat at me for a while. But knowing that next year is just around the corner, and come on, how fitting would it be that the Ticats will get their 16th Canadian Championship in 2016 and get to do it in front of what I'm going to assume is going to be a lot of Ticats fans in Toronto for the Grey Cup. Like, there's going to be, I think, a healthy contingent of Ticats faithful heading to Toronto for the 2016 Grey Cup, more so than there would be in Winnipeg. So it would be kind of cool if that's where they broke their streak and finally hoisted the cup in front of what I'm going to assume is going to be quite a few Ticats fans.
That would be perfect. And you look back at this year, if next year if we have Claros the whole year and we sign, I think, you know, there's a ton of free agents, but I think with Austin and the atmosphere that he's created and the new facility in Hamilton, it's going to be a big draw for a lot of these players to re-sign. So I think we'll be a great team next year. I think if Claros is in the mix the whole year, we could be, you know, a juggernaut like we were earlier in this season, where it just looked like we were far and above the best team in the league. So we have a lot to look forward to, and hopefully you're right. There's a ton of Ticats fans, and the Ticats are in the Grey Cup next year in Toronto at BMO Field. Yeah, it hurts right now, but, you know, next year is going to be another great year for the Ticats.
Where do you rank this loss on the scale of heartbreaking defeats as your time as a fan and as a CFL consumer?
Well, it's really high up there. I don't know why, but I keep, when we talk about heartbreaking losses, I keep thinking about the Toronto Hamilton semifinal with Cleo Lemon as quarterback
in 2010. Yeah.
That just really, really, I just totally didn't expect Toronto to win that game. Like, I knew that Hamilton was going to win that game, and it just, that one really stung. You know, obviously, last year's Grey Cup was tough because of the Brandon Banks play at the end where, you know, but we don't have to get into it. We know what happened. 2013 Grey Cup was tough because it was just such a beatdown. It was a really tough game to watch. And there's some other ones in there that I'm kind of blank. Oh, the BC game, the Hamilton BC game in the playoffs where Casey Printers came into Hamilton and, you know, they won that game in overtime after such a exciting ending to the game with Stella, the diving catch to tie it up. So it's got to be in the top three, this Ottawa game, just because of the way that it happened with that second and 25 and the 93-yard touchdown when it looked like we had the game wrapped up. They played before, and then, you know, who would have thought they would have got 25 yards, let alone 93. So it's got to be top three.
Yeah, you've hit a lot of the same ones that I have that are tough losses. The two back-to-back semifinal defeats in 09 and 10 to BC and Toronto. The Toronto one especially, you brought up, you mentioned Cleo Lemon. That's pretty much the only thing that needs to be said as to why that one really stung. This one's up there. The Grey Cup last year is up there. The 2013 Grey Cup didn't really bother me because this team had finally gotten over that hump and gotten to the Grey Cup, and it was in Saskatchewan against the Rough Riders. I obviously hoped that they'd win, but I had no illusions to the fact that this was probably going to be a pretty big beat down by Saskatchewan. That one didn't bother me as much because the week before they had dispatched the Argos in an epic East final, and that to me was the monkey off the back. They finally gotten back there after so many years of not being there. So last year's Grey Cup loss to Calgary bothered me more because the loss was, like you said, it was so close and the Brandon Banks thing. But because I'd seen them get there and lose, and it was like, okay, well, they're finally back to being a team that could compete. They get back to the Grey Cup. They'd gone on this really good run to end the season. They looked like they were clicking on all cylinders. And they gave Calgary, who was by far and away the best team in the league last year, they gave them all they could handle. That was a really close game. And just like in this one against Ottawa, there was just the tiny mistakes that we have talked about a ton over the past year, but just these little mistakes that seem to doom them in that game, and it doomed them in this game. But yeah, this one I think stings more than most, simply because I don't think this game takes place if back in September we don't lose Caleros to the knee injury. This is not to take anything away from Ottawa. They had a great season there, deserving of going to the Grey Cup. But I think if we're all honest with ourselves, fans across the league would say if Caleros stays healthy, this game A is not in Ottawa. It's in Hamilton. And yeah, they might be playing the Argos and not the Red Blacks because the Argos had Ottawa's number all season. It's kind of weird. Hamilton couldn't beat Ottawa. Ottawa couldn't beat Toronto. And Toronto couldn't beat Hamilton. So if the playoff matchups are different, this game might not take place. Those games that Hamilton lost at the end of the year to Ottawa might not have mattered. Look, they're not going to score 6 points with Caleros at the helm at home. That just wasn't going to happen. They probably don't lose to Edmonton in the game where Caleros got hurt. So there's so many different things that would have happened. And I'm not here to say that No, oh, they would have won the Grey Cup if Claris doesn't get hurt. But I think this whole season plays out differently if he stays healthy. But yeah, just so this one to me is just it eats. Maybe it's, you know, it's the most recent loss, so it eats a little hard right now. But yeah, I guess we just got to move on and hope that next year will be the year.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So you brought up free agents earlier, so let's get into that a little bit, because Three Down Nation posted a list, unofficial list, of all the potential free agents this offseason, and my, there are a lot, especially in Hamilton. 34 guys are eligible for free agency from the Ticats. There's just so many guys league-wide that are out there, but the list for Hamilton, just some of the names on there: Terrell Sinkfield, Bakari Grant, Justin Hickman, Brian Hall, Eric Harris, Taylor Reed, Emmanuel Davis, Justin Medlock, Andy Fantuz, Ted Laurent, Brian Balky, Courtney Steven. Those are just a handful of the guys that are going to be eligible for free agency now. Between now and February, before free agency opens, I assume some of these guys are probably going to get re-signed, but this team's going to look a lot different going into next season. And I just want to kind of get from you, who do you think, both American and Canadian players, who are your sort of like top five guys, or who are some of the guys you think that the team should look to bring back the most, if you know what I'm saying?
Well, there's a number of Canadians that have to be brought back. You know, you got to bring Ted Laurent back. I think you got to bring Courtney Stevens back. I'm not sure about Fantuz. I don't know. We might have seen Fantuz last game in a Ticats uniform just because of his large contract, his age, and his injury troubles that have, you know, plagued him for the last couple seasons with the Ticats. So, you know, I think maybe Bulky's a tough one too because, you know, his injury troubles. But I'd like to see him back. I'd like to see Atkinson back. I think that he has a lot of potential. I know that he's had injury troubles in the past as well, but he hasn't played that much. So maybe he's an up-and-comer on the defensive line in the middle there. You got to bring back Sinkfield. I'm not sure about Bakari Grant. You know, I was thrilled when he came back earlier this season, or late in the offseason, because he was, it took him a while to get re-signed, but I don't know if he's coming back or not. Brian Hall in the middle, he's a beast. You got to bring him back. So there's a lot of players, a lot of talented players that are on that list that I would love to see back. I know they're not all going to be back. Emmanuel Davis, I'd love to see him back. He had a great year. So there's just, like, I'd like to see them all sign back, but I know that's not going to happen. But who are your top guys that you want to see re-sign with the Ticats?
Well, Ted Laurent's the big one. I think he's going to get a huge, huge contract from whoever signs him. And I think it's got to be here. He's a beast in the middle. Like, 2 years here, he was the team's top Canadian. Brian Balky's a guy I'd like to see bring back. I think you can get him at a team-friendly rate because of the injuries. I hate the fact that he's been injured the last year and a half or so. I think it was the Saskatchewan game in 2014 where he got hurt and he hasn't played since. But that could sort of help the team and not have to spend as much to bring him back. And I don't know if you noticed, but he was always on the sidelines for these games. He's always around the team. He didn't go anywhere. He stuck by the team even though he was out. So he's a guy that I think could be easily persuaded to come back. Mm-hmm. I'm with you on Terrell Sinkfield. I think he's got to come back. He had a breakout season, and I think they missed him against Ottawa. He missed the game with an injury, and they brought in I cannot for the life of me pronounce his name, so I'm not even going to try.
Polaris, underwhelming.
Yeah, and Sinkfield in that role, who knows what he does? Brian Hall's a guy I like to bring back. Just they need to keep as much of that defensive line intact as they can. Eric Harris, I think, is a guy that they have to bring. He's very versatile. He's not the best linebacker in the league, but he's a guy that can do a whole bunch of different things. Emmanuel Davis, I would like to see back. But the problem with trying to bring these guys back is they're going to cost money. Where the Ticats, a lot of these names we listed, where they had an advantage the last few seasons, these guys were all on their first deals. So they came in at a very team-friendly rate. They're all going to get raises. So there's going to be so many guys that won't be able to make the team simply because they're not going to be able to afford them. So are guys going to take less money to play here? Maybe. Should they? I don't think they should. It would suck to see some of these great players go, but these guys have to maximize their earning potential. So if they go elsewhere because they can get more money, I'm not going to fault them for that whatsoever. I know there's fans out there who don't like when players leave, but if they leave for more money to better provide for their families, how can I be mad at that? You or I would do the exact same thing if given the opportunity.
Yeah, it's just the reality of the situation. I know that fans look at it as, you know, loyalty to the team, but there's no loyalty the other way. So, yeah, you're right. Players have to do what they have to do. They have to do what's best for them, best for their family. And, you know, football careers are so short that they need to make the most money that they can in a small window of opportunity.
But there's just so many guys out there league-wide. Calgary has 20 free agents. Edmonton has 21. BC has 16. Winnipeg has 12. Saskatchewan has 32 guys. Hamilton, 34. Montreal, 19. Toronto, 26. Ottawa, 22. Like, every team has got a ton of free agents. So I'm not sure if guys are going to be – I'm trying to think of the word here. There might not be as many bidding wars for as many guys as you'd see in the past. So some of these guys might be forced – force might be the wrong word, but they're sort of hemmed in into re-signing with a team for less money simply because the market's not there. There's just so many guys out there that some of them are going to get paid. Laurent, wherever he goes, is going to get paid. He is probably the best Canadian he's probably one of the best Canadian defensive linemen, period. And he's probably the best defensive tackle, regardless of nationality, in the league. Like a team like Winnipeg, could you imagine them pairing up Laurent in the middle with Westerman on the end? That'd be a defensive line that no one would want to take on.
And he really showed his worth, you know, these last couple games, the last two games against Ottawa in the regular season, and then the two playoff games. He really, really stepped up his game and showed his worth. So, you know, other teams are going to be looking at that and offering, you know, throwing whatever money he wants at him. So it's going to be interesting to see if he resigns in Hamilton or takes his talent somewhere else.
But like you said, I think the culture that Austin has cultivated here, the brand new facilities, the first class organization that Hamilton has become, an owner who will spend till he's broke essentially to make this team a winner. I think you're going to see a lot of guys want to play here. It's just a matter of if it can be afforded. But like I said, league-wide, there's a ton of guys. Have you had a chance to look at the list? And is there anyone out there? Who are some of the top free agents around the league, you think? And who are some guys that you think you might want to see Hamilton maybe make a run at if they sort of lose out on the guys that they have here?
I haven't had a chance to look at the whole list, but I don't remember a time where there was this many free agents. I mean, you listed off the numbers on each team, and it's just incredible. Maybe it's because of the new CBA and you know, you don't have to sign a 3-year contract. You can sign, what is it? Can you sign 1-year contracts now that, like, the veterans and?
Yeah, anyone outside of first-year players can sign 1-year deals.
Yeah, so that must be because, yeah, I don't remember a time when there's been, you know, 20, 30 free agents on a team. It's just crazy. So there's going to be a lot of different faces on different teams next year that. It should be interesting. It should be a really interesting offseason with all these free agents.
I think you see guys re-sign because the money, I don't think, is going to be that much different league-wide. And if a guy is happy where he is, I feel like they tend to stay. But here are just some of the names. I'll go through each team and just list off some of the – just some. Not these aren't all. This, if you want a comprehensive list, go to 3downnation.com. It's there. But here are some guys. You got Eric Rogers. You got Keon Raymond, Jerome Messam. You have, John White in Edmonton, Adarius Bowman, Kenny Stafford, Armando Sewell, J.C. Sherritt, Aaron Grimes, Shamad Chambers. Let's see, B.C., Travis Lule, Jovan Olafioye, Chris Rainey, Manny Arsenault is a free agent. Let's see, who do we got in Winnipeg? Winnipeg doesn't have much. Nick Moore is available in Winnipeg. Saskatchewan, geez, the list is Ryan Smith, Alex Hall, Tyron Brackenridge, Weldon Brown. Oh, boy. Rob Begg, Chris Getzlaff, Hamilton we've gone through, Montreal, Winston Venables out there, Fred Stamps, Nick Lewis, Stefan Logan, Dan LeFevre. I know he hasn't done much being injured and all, but there's a guy that he's a guy that could be brought in as a backup and with all the quarterback injuries we've seen this year, could be a viable starter somewhere. Gerald Brown, John Bowman is a free agent. Josh Burke is a free agent. We obviously have Trevor Harris and Ricky Ray in Toronto. Chad Owens is a free agent. Tristan Okapalugo, whose name I probably butchered once again, he's free. Greg Jones, who was the team's most outstanding defensive player nominee, is a free agent. Cleon Lang is a free agent. Ricky Foley, Corey Greenwood, Jermaine Gabriel. These are all guys that started this year. Now we go to Ottawa, and Chris Williams is available, and Damaso Munoz and Javon Johnson. Just the list goes on and on. Justin Capicotti, Zach Evans, like just I could keep going. This list is ridiculous with these guys who are starters and starting caliber players that are going to be available. This is going to be one hell of an offseason, I think.
Yeah, the last couple off seasons have been pretty interesting, but this one's going to – I think this is going to step it up a notch because just hearing all those names is just –
it makes your head spin because
it's a virtual all-star team of free agents. You know, there's just so many guys out there that you'd want to have on your team. So it's going to be, you know, you're going to keep your eyes on the CFL in the offseason because they're going to make a lot of news with all these free agents and free signings and signings with different teams. So I'm, you know, we still have one more game to go and it's a big one. It's the Grey Cup, but this offseason is going to be a doozy, I think.
You just made the greatest segue in the history of the podcast. Let's talk about the Grey Cup. We have no Ticats preview this week, obviously, but there is one game left to go, and it is in Winnipeg this Sunday. It's the Eskimos and the Red Blacks. I don't know about you, but I don't really see this being anything other than a resounding victory for the Edmonton Eskimos.
I see it a bit closer. I think that, you know, the Red Blacks faced a really good defense in the Ticats 3 weeks in a row, and they... the one game they didn't score many points, but the other two games they really did well. So I'd put the Ticats defense up there with the Eskimos defense, maybe not quite as good. But I think that I think it's going to be close. I think the Red Blacks can put up some points. If the Eskimos offense plays the way that it did against Calgary, then maybe it won't be close. But, you know, the overall better team is the Eskimos. Obviously, they have the, you know, the best defense in the league, and right now it looks like the best offense in the league. And they have pretty good special teams. You know, Lawrence is back there. He's a speedy guy. He can take it back to the house. He can get them good field position. Sean White's been kicking well. So, yeah, I don't see it as a blowout. I think they'll keep it close. But obviously, the Eskimos are the favorite, and I think they're going to win it.
I don't think this is going to be close at all. I think this is going to be a bloodbath. I don't think Ottawa, and to be fair, I don't know, I don't think Hamilton would have gone in there and given Edmonton much resistance either. I think the Eskimos are just on a mission, and the beating they put on Calgary, if that game would have been a little bit closer, if it would have been more of like the East Final, a back-and-forth game, I think I might have given Ottawa more of a chance, but Edmonton was just clicking. Defensively, they were killing the Stampeders, except for that, what, five-minute stretch near the end of the game when Calgary made it a little bit interesting. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they were forcing turnovers. They were putting out big hits. They were not allowing the Stampeders to do much of anything. And that offense was capitalizing on every single mistake that Calgary made. And I just don't see any way that Edmonton doesn't go in there and just continue this role. They've won 8 or 9 in a row now. And they, like I said, they just look like a team on a mission. And it just feels to me like Ottawa is the unfortunate recipient of a beatdown. This to me reminds me of the Grey Cup 2 years ago, where I don't think anyone was going to go into Regina and beat the Rough Riders in the Grey Cup. I don't think the 95 Baltimore Stallions would have gone in there and given Saskatchewan much resistance at all. I just see this the same way. I know this game's not in Edmonton, and that game wasn't Regina. I just don't see a way that the Eskimos lose this game.
Yeah, we were waiting all season for the Eskimos' offense to start clicking, and we knew when they, if they did, they would be a dominant team, and it seems to have happened. All season long, it was just, you know, the Eskimos have a really great defense, but if the offense, you know, the offense isn't looking good, and all of a sudden, they won 8 or 9 in a row, but a lot of those games, they didn't really perform that well on offense. You know, the game against Hamilton, Riley had like minus 74 yards passing, and then all of a sudden, you know, the Montreal game, last game of the season, he really starts playing well. And then they have 3 weeks off. You know, there's all these questions about, oh, they're going to be rusty. Are they going to be rusty? They weren't rusty at all. They came out and right off, you know, as soon as the ball was kicked off, the offense was just clicking. You know, Darrell Walker, Bowman, Mike Riley's just on fire right now. I didn't know what was wrong with him early in the season. He just looked terrible. It looked like maybe he wasn't a starting quarterback anymore after the injury. You know, they got the running back in there. I forget his name.
Oh, Shavers?
Yeah, yeah. And he looks pretty good. You know, they have a couple options there at running back. So, yeah, the offensive line is doing a great job protecting Riley. Riley's on fire right now. The receivers are on fire. So, you know, you got to go with Edmonton, because they're just clicking on all cylinders, but I disagree with you that's going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be closer than you think. but I've been wrong in the past. So I think it should be, it's an interesting matchup. You know, Ottawa-Edmonton, we haven't seen that since 1981, I believe. So it's a fresh matchup in the Grey Cup, which is, I would rather have been Hamilton-Edmonton, obviously, but it's a fresh matchup, and that makes things interesting. So it should be an interesting Grey Cup.
I am having a hard time finding an in for this game. Normally, I can find something to get my interest up in these games, but in past Grey Cups, the Ticats were in them, and then I would cheer against a team or something. I'm having a hard time finding a route into this game where I can find it interesting from a fan's point of view, and that's sort of where I'm coming from with the blowout. Like, if I thought this was going to be a close game, there's sort of my end of the game. But I think this is going to be, like I said, a bloodbath, and it's making me question whether or not this is even going to be the premier football event on Sunday that's going to be on my television. I've had my fan bona fides questioned because I'm not all that interested in this Grey Cup matchup, and frankly, I find that absolutely ridiculous. Look, I do a podcast about the league. I've blogged about the league for 5 years. If I'm not a fan, then who the hell is a fan? And I hate this idea that people who don't prescribe to someone's definition of what a fan is, they're a lesser fan. I'm getting sick of hearing that. And I just don't have an interest in this game. It's going to be on my television, but it's not going to be, like, the last, say, 10 years or so, I've always found a reason to make the Grey Cup the must-watch event. This year, I'm just really having a hard time finding a way to get into this game, and this is no different than I felt in other sports. I haven't watched a full NBA Finals. I'm a big basketball fan. I haven't watched a full NBA Finals in 3 or 4 years. I haven't watched a World Series in I don't know how long. I think Barry Bonds was playing in the last World Series that I watched from start to finish. I haven't watched the last two Super Bowls because I didn't care for the teams that were in them, essentially, and I just didn't really want to watch them. I don't understand why me not wanting to watch the Grey Cup is somehow an indictment on my fandom. I understand it's the biggest game of the year, and maybe my excitement should be higher, but give me a reason to watch this game, Mike. Talk me into it.
Well, you got Burris, you know.
I hate Henry Burris. I want to punch Henry Burris. Yeah, and the guy that's, can't stand that guy.
That's why you watch, because you think it's going to be a bloodbath. You want to see him. You want to see him cry and whine and bitch the whole game about, being hit and penalties and all this crap. So, maybe just the pure beatdown of the Red Blacks that you think is going to happen is a reason to watch. I always get up for the Grey Cup, no matter what team. I don't know. It's just something about that day. Unfortunately, I have to work until about 7 that day, so I'll miss the Grey Cup, most of it at least. I'm planning on DVRing it, but, I always get excited for the Grey Cup. It sucks that I'm going to miss most of it, but I think it's going to be a good game. I know you think it's going to be a bloodbath, but that's a reason to watch. I think that it's going to be interesting because, the weather could be pretty cold. It might be a classic Grey Cup, snowy day. Maybe I have more interest in it because I'm in Edmonton and I was at the West Final, and I think there's some excitement brewing in the city. I'd love to watch it live with other people, but unfortunately, I can't, but I don't know. I always get up for the Grey Cup. This doesn't mean that I'm a bigger fan than anyone or anything like that, but I think once the game starts, maybe you will get more into it and get a feel for it, once the tires start rolling.
Yeah, you might be right. I just, over the years, I used to watch these games, these championship games, these championship series just out of, well, I have to watch them. It's the championship. And then recently, like I mentioned, the last two Super Bowls have held absolutely no interest to me whatsoever, especially last year's, because last year it was Seattle and New England, and I would rather have my eyeballs poked with needles than watch as either of those two teams win a championship. They are easily two of my 5 most disliked sports franchises in all of professional and amateur sports. Like, I can't stand the Seahawks and I can't stand the Patriots. And you lived out east, so you probably dealt with your fair amount of Patriots fans, am I correct?
Yeah, there's a ton of them out there.
Yeah, and they're, to put it point blankly, most of them are assholes. So I just couldn't stand either of those teams. So the Super Bowl was just, no, I don't really care. And it was the first Super Bowl I hadn't watched in, I think the first one I watched was in 1988. I think it was San Francisco and Cincinnati. And I don't think I missed one between then and last year. And I, you know, I checked in and, oh, what's going on? And because my brother was watching it, but I just didn't care. I did not care for that game whatsoever. And I get the same feeling here. I don't have the same dislike of these two teams like I have for the Seahawks and the Patriots, but I don't like Ottawa point blank because of Henry Burris. This past week, I don't know if you saw or heard what he had to say during his media availability, but he spent a portion of it talking about the hit that Simone Lawrence put on him 3 weeks ago and his departure from Hamilton 2 years ago. He's still whining about both those things. And I have just, I do not like Henry Burris. I used to be a fan of Henry Burris. Now I can't stand him. He is up there with Ricky Foley, as far as I'm concerned, on the players in the league that I just do not like. And in Edmonton, I don't dislike people on the Eskimos. There's just one player that I really, really gets under my skin, and that's Dion Lacey. And it all started with that idiocy of him standing at the coin flip and not shaking hands and just all this junk. And it just, it rubbed me the wrong way. So knowing that one of those two guys is going to win a championship, I don't want to watch that happen. But maybe you're right. Maybe once the game gets started and things get rolling, that'll go away. But just, I just don't like it. I just don't like this matchup. And maybe if Calgary was there, I'd be a little more into it, because then the interest is, will Huffnagel go out on a championship, and can Calgary win their first back-to-back titles? And I don't find that they have as many players on their squad that are as dislikable as Edmonton. But yeah, I don't know, man. I kind of feel bad that you want to watch it and can't, and I can watch it and might not. I feel like kind of a jerk for that, but I just maybe as the week goes on and we get closer to Sunday, my interest levels will rise. But as we sit here right now recording this show, I'm not sure how much of this game I'm going to watch.
I think it'll matter on how close it is. I mean, and maybe as the hype machine grows during this week, you might maybe someone will pop off and say something stupid in the media and, you know, build up the rivalry a bit. So, you know, I'm excited to see this game. I think that Edmonton-Ottawa matchup is new and fresh. I already said this, but I think it's I think it's going to be a good game to watch. So maybe as the game goes along and it proves to be a better game, you might watch the whole thing. So I'm looking forward to a Grey Cup Sunday. I always do. And I think it should be a pretty good matchup, pretty entertaining matchup. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Eskimos kick the crap out of the Red Blacks, but I think it's going to be close.
Well, I guess people will have to tune in next week to find out how much of this game I actually watched. Let's get to some questions. We got a few questions. You got some on Twitter. I got some in the Three Down Nation comment section. Do you want me to go first? Do you want to go? I think you should go first. The question segment's yours. You got to take it away.
All right. Just got two. One from USFL Tecmo. Do you think Austin's demeanor takes attention away from how great he is at coaching?
I think anyone who looks at Austin's demeanor and judges him based on that, as opposed to how good he is at coaching, is missing something, honestly. Because I think Ken Austin is very, if I'm to use an NFL parallel, and I'm sure I'm going to get on for talking about the NFL on a CFL podcast, because I guess I'm not a big CFL fan, whatever. He reminds me a lot of Bill Belichick, and so he's sort of, you know, terse and not very open, but the guy wins. And no one can take away from the fact that Bill Belichick is a Hall of Fame coach. Ken Austin's a damn good football coach. And if people look at him and see sort of his grumpiness and his gruffness and use that as a reason to dismiss all the things that he's done as a head coach in the CFL, well, that's their loss as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I could see how maybe if you're a fan of another team, you're like, oh, Austin's freaking out again, you know. But I'd rather have a coach freaking out like that. And, you know, I always hated when Marcel Belfay was the coach and, you know, they'd have a terrible series and over again. And the offense would run off the field or the defense would run off the field after a bad series. And he'd just be clapping his hands, you know, yay, team, yay. But I like Austin's, the players have to be accountable with Austin. He's not going to clap his hands all happily if there's a bad series or there's a bad play. He's going to get after the guy. And I like that. You know, I think that he can be a pretty cold individual. Sometimes he gets kind of rude with the with the media and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm not in the media, so that doesn't bother me that much. I wish he'd be a little nicer to our friend Drew. But other than that, I think that I don't think it takes away from his coaching. I just think he's a passionate dude. He wants to win more than anything. And a coach freaking out is... A football coach freaking out is like one of the most amusing things to me in the world. Just when they get really angry, not Austin, because usually when he's freaking out, I'm angry as well. but if it was another coach, I find it like really amusing when football coaches are getting really angry. So, but that's not the question. I don't think it takes away from his coaching. I just think that he's a passionate guy, and he, you know, emotions are going to get the best of him.
You must have really loved watching Jim Harbaugh coach the 49ers then, eh?
Yeah, he was pretty emotional.
Yeah, I will always – my lasting memory of him, a great coach. Don't – like, I will never take anything away from him as a coach. But he flipped out in the NFC title game a couple years ago when San Francisco was playing Atlanta. And it was one of the funniest tantrums a coach has ever thrown on the sidelines. And I'm a 49ers fan, and I miss that guy like hell, because this team, that team has gone down the tubes. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, this one comes from AJ Nolte 44. Do either of you guys have any thoughts on draft prospects Ty Cat should be interested in?
I don't, really. I don't get a ton of opportunities to watch the CIS. So my knowledge of who's coming in at draft time, and I don't even know who the eligible guys are. I sort of defer to guys like Dwayne Ford, who are studying this stuff and have their fingers on the pulse. So I don't have any thoughts on the draft, especially this early. Maybe as we get closer to draft time, we can talk a little bit about the prospects coming in. I remember last year we had the same sort of problem. I don't get a chance to see enough CIS ball to be able to make an educated opinion on this subject.
Yeah, maybe if the rights holders, Sportsnet, would show some CIS football. You know, they don't show anything until, you know, the final three games of the, you know, they show the Gates Cup and the Dunsmore Cup or whatever it is, and then the Vanier Cup, and that's it. So I guess CHCH broadcasts some games, or maybe just like a couple playoff games, but there's no regular season CIS football on TV. I think maybe like a local broadcaster like might show some games. But other than that, you know, Sportsnet has the rights and they don't show anything other than the last three games of the season. So it's hard to, unless you're going to games, and even then, if you're going to games in your local city, you're only seeing one, your local team, and then one team that comes each week. So it's hard to get a grasp on who's the best players, who's the top prospects in the CIS when Sportsnet doesn't show shit and you just can't watch the games.
I don't understand. What does Sportsnet show at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday in October that necessitates them not showing at least one? Like, why don't they show one CIS game a week? They acquired The Score and turned it into Sportsnet 360, and I'm pretty sure The Score once a week would show, like, a highlight CIS matchup. Usually it was an OUA game. You'd get, like, Windsor and McMaster or, like, Waterloo and Laurier. You know, it'd be a big game. A big OUA game that I'm pretty sure they used to tend to show. But why is Sportsnet, they have these channels, and they have a plethora of other channels. Why are they not showing a game a week? Like, I can't imagine it costs that much to set up to show a CIS game. I can't imagine, and I imagine the ratings would be decent enough to warrant showing them. But you're right, they don't show a damn thing until we get to the final three games of the season. And to me, that takes away from the CIS, because all I keep hearing from followers of the CIS is how much it's improved over the years. But if it's not on my TV screen, I'm not going to get a chance to see it. I'm not, like you said, I could go to McMaster and watch games, but that wouldn't give me sort of an insight into who would be deemed draft worthy, draft eligible, and all that other sort of stuff.
I don't get it either. Why acquire the rights if you're not going to show? I know they acquired the rights before they got the NHL rights. But they have a billion channels on sport, like Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 1, Sportsnet West, East, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they just don't show anything. So I don't know why they do. Like you said, the cost, you know, wouldn't be that much to produce a CIS football game. They're not bringing that many cameras. It's a head-scratcher, but I'm not the biggest fan of Sportsnet, and that's one of the reasons why.
They employ one of the smartest young football minds in the country. Justin Dunk used to work for the Ticats. He does some work for Three Down Nation. He's a really astute guy. He does a podcast with Drew Edwards, Three Down Nation podcast. Drew, he's a really smart guy. He is a former quarterback at Guelph. He knows the CIS. They have him under their employ. He works for Sportsnet. There's a guy that you could throw out on TV as a color commentator, pair him up with one of the bazillion play-by-play guys that they have. You got a great product that you can show there, and it's just mind-boggling that they just completely ignore it. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just, you know, why get the rights if you're not going to show any of the games?
It's almost like they acquired them simply so TSN couldn't have them.
Yeah. I know they, you know, we know that there's the rival between TSN and Sportsnet and Bell and Rogers. It's a really, there's a lot of hatred there. I know that they own the Leafs together or they own MLSC together, but it's just such a weird pairing because there's so much hatred between those two companies.
So I have some questions from the Three Down Nation comment section. They all come from a regular contributor to our show, Adam. He's listed off five questions here. There's some Ticats questions. There's also a CFL question. We'll start with the general CFL question, and he asks, do you think the CFL should change the All-Star teams to feature five wide receiver spots, considering that is the way the game has evolved and every team uses a five receiver set as their main formation?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, it adds another position on the All-Star team where there wouldn't be as much controversy if there's a fifth receiver, Sinkfield probably gets on that team. So, you know, it brings in a guy that was left off the team that should be on the team. So, and like you said, you know, there's five receiver sets in the league on every team. So it does make sense to bring in a fifth receiver on that All-Star team.
What would you do? Would you get rid of a running back spot, or would you just simply add a receiving spot?
I just simply add a receiving spot. You know, it's not like they're actually playing the game, so I just add a receiver spot.
Okay, so even if you leave the running back spot, I think putting a fifth receiver spot is a no-brainer. That will, you know, eliminate some of the talk of guys getting left off the team and all that sorts of stuff. But I'm more interested in maybe getting rid of a running back spot because we just can't find – there's no team out there really, with the exception of one or two, that runs one guy almost exclusively. Even Jerome Messam, who made the team in the West this year, when he was in Saskatchewan, he was sharing carries with Anthony Allen. And yeah, Messam went over 1,000 yards, and he did it with the Stampeders, filling, you know, he was the bell cow back there because he was filling in for John Cornish. You don't see a ton of teams use just one back exclusively. And with injuries to running backs, you see guys go down. And maybe in the past, the two running back spots were a running back and a fullback. Maybe if we go back 30, 40 years when teams were running a lot more, that was sort of the reason for it. But yeah, I think a fifth wide receiver spot is an absolute no-brainer. Okay, so now we're getting into some Ticats questions. And the first one is, what message does it send to free agent to be Courtney Steven that he was replaced at times in the Ottawa game by the team's biggest liability all season, Ed Gainey, at field corner?
Well, it sucks because maybe if he was out there, he would have made that play on 2nd and 25. But I think it was a ratio situation. I think there was injuries and, you know, he had to be switched out. Someone had to go out, and I guess it was him. So, yes, it sucks that, you know, they had to put Gainey in there because he hasn't been great this season, to say the least. But I think it was just because of the injuries and the it wasn't, you know, because of his play or anything like that. I think it was just a necessity.
I just don't understand at any point why you would think Ed Gainey is a better option than Courtney Steven. I know that they were using Gainey more because Norwood was out and they had Nadon in there at defensive end and he was a starter, so they didn't have to start Steven. But just because you don't have to start a Gainey, to me, doesn't mean you shouldn't. Steven is better than Gainey, and maybe he makes that play on Ellingson, maybe he doesn't. We're never going to know. What we do know is that Gainey didn't make the play, and for most of this season, Gainey has been hugely unimpressive. He's a free agent. He's one of the guys that are listed as a free agent on the Ticats this year. I would be shocked if he comes back next year. What it says to Steven is, what I hope it doesn't say is that we don't want you, because that guy turned in, he wasn't an all-star, but he turned in an all-star caliber season, really came into his own. I'm hoping it's maybe just one of those things where teams make decisions sometimes and they don't work out, and this was just one of them. I hope it's not that we've seen the last of Courtney Steven in a Ticats uniform, because that, to me, would be a huge loss.
Yeah, I want to see Steven back. He's had a great season. I thought he had a really good rookie season. He's really stepped up his game over the years. So, yeah, I hope he's back. He's a big ratio changer, and he's just a great player overall, Canadian or not.
Next up, which Canadians impressed you this season that you want to see going forward? I was impressed by Byron Archambault on special teams until he was injured, as well as Landon Rice, who I thought played well, especially with his versatility, with him playing four or five spots on the O-line. So what young Canadian did you think stepped up his game this year and you would like to see more of going forward?
Well, I agree that Archambault was really good on special teams. I think Bo Landry was good on special teams. You know, I know that Atkinson isn't exactly young. He's been with the team for a while, but I thought that he had a really good end of the season, even though he wasn't in there that much. He made an impact with a sack. Yeah, it's tough if they're not starting to judge how they play, but there was a couple guys on special teams that I thought had a great season and they gave a lot of effort, so maybe we'll see those guys like Archambault, Plessis. He's not exactly young either, but he, you know, maybe we see these guys getting to more playing time in the defense maybe next year or the year after that.
Mike Daly's my answer.
Sorry to cut you off here. You're right, I totally forgot about him. He played so well when Butler went down. You basically didn't even know Butler was gone because Daly did such a great job.
Yeah, he was he got hurt, but he was, when he was in there for Butler, like you said, he was excellent. I believe he had a two interception game against Edmonton. I think he even had a sack in that game as well. He really stepped up his play when he was thrust into a more prominent role. And I think Craig Butler is in the last year of his contract next season. And I like Craig Butler. I think he's a good player, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Butler let go, not let go, but not re-signed after his contract is up. And Mike Daly becomes a starting safety for this team, because I was just super impressed with the level of his play. There was next to no drop off from Butler to him when he got in there for Butler's injury.
Yeah, the two players are basically interchangeable. You know, you don't even notice when either. You know, they seem to be similar players. And yeah, Daly has a lot of talent. He's younger than Butler, obviously, and maybe he's the guy after next season, or maybe they make a trade or something like that. So yeah, he's an up-and-comer, and he'll be a starter for the Ticats for years to come, or for another team, because he's got that much talent.
Yeah, I think there was a game earlier in the year. I think it was the first Winnipeg game, the one where Hamilton beat them like 52-24 or something. And I think going into that game, Courtney Steven got hurt on like the last day of practice, and they never had a chance to work anyone in. And they put Butler in at linebacker, and they put Daly in at safety. And I think Daly had an interception in that game, too. Every time he's been put on the field, he's made plays, and he's improved immensely since they drafted him a couple of years ago. So I really want to see more of him in the future, and I hope he's worked into... You know, if they lose Courtney Steven to free agency this year, I think you move Butler down to linebacker. Maybe he fills in for an Eric Harris type player, if Eric Harris is allowed to go elsewhere. But you put Butler down there and you put Daly in at safety. I don't think you miss a beat. Okay, so two more. The Ticats have five free agent defensive tackles, three of which are proven starters. Atkinson has played well but is very injury prone. From 1 to 5, who is your priority to re-sign at the position? So I'm going to assume that the five defensive tackles he's talking about are Ted Laurent, Brian Baalke, Michael Atkinson, Brian Hall, and Hassan Hazime. I think those are the five. Those got to be the five he's referring to. So from 1 to 5, who are your guys to bring back?
Well, I think Ted Laurent's number one, obviously. He's probably the best D tackle in the league, and he's Canadian. Brian Hall's a beast in the middle as well, so he'd be number two. Baalke, you got to bring back. I think that he, you know, he's been injured, but if he can get back to what he was, he's one of the best in the league as well. Hazimi, and who's the other guy that was free agent?
Atkinson.
Yeah, Atkinson. You know, he brings depth at the position because he's Canadian as well. And like the commenter said, he's been injury prone, but I think that when they drafted him, they thought there was a ton of potential, and I think there is still a ton of potential if he can stay healthy. He's still fairly young, so he'd be four, and then Hazimi would be the fifth guy, because we just haven't seen much of him. I'm sure he's a talented player, but I just haven't seen enough of him to make a judgment call on him, so he'd be number five.
Yeah, my five is exact same as yours. Teddy Laurent, for obvious reasons. I think we've talked about it already. I don't think we really have to go into why we want him back. Brian Hall will be number two. I think he's played extremely well since he's arrived in Hamilton. And if they can get him back at a team-friendly rate, and I don't see why you wouldn't want him back. Baalke, to me, if he can stay healthy, is a guy that can start. So he'd be a great number three option. And then you have Atkinson and Hazime. I think they're both sort of the same, and with Lyndon Gaydosh re-signed for a longer-term deal this year, even though he's coming off the Achilles injury. I could see both Atkinson and Hazime not brought back simply because if they can get Bulky back especially, they'll have those three Canadian defensive tackles that they can rotate in if all these guys resign, is what I'm saying. But yeah, Atkinson and Hazime would be my 4 and 5, but I don't see them as a priority. The other three, I think, are especially the number one guy. I think that's the biggest priority. I think that's the biggest re-signed free agent priority this team has, period. Not just at the defensive tackle position.
Yeah, totally. You gotta bring Laurent back. He's just too much of a game changer not to bring back.
All right, so last one, and this is a bit of a tough one. I know it's way too early, but what does your starting lineup for Week 1 next year look like? Work on the assumption that Caleros will not be ready for the start of the season.
Whew. So yeah, I get Caleros is not ready. Just the way Mazzoli played in that playoff game, we got to go Mazzoli starting quarterback.
Hold on. One thing, though, he's a free agent. Maybe he's not back.
Maybe he's not back. That's if he is back, if he resigns, then Mazzoli's the starting quarterback. If not, then probably Matthews. Gable, running back, he looked great. You know, he didn't get injured in the playoff games, so he'll be the starting tailback. And then you got the offensive line, you know, Dykowski, Filer, Bombin. It's tough. Figueroa, maybe. Who's the other outside tackle then?
Here's the thing. Figueroa, Jeremy Lewis, and Jake Olsen are all free agents too.
Okay. So, I don't know. Figueroa, Olsen, let's just assume they come back. This is kind of tough because I'm kind of doing this on the fly. Tasker, Singfield, Tolliver. I'm not sure if Fantuz is going to be back or not, so I'm going to say that he's not back. I'm going to say Spencer Watt fills that position. So that would be my offense. And then the fifth receiver, I'm going to maybe go with I'll go with Underwood, I guess. So that would be my offense. Who do you have on the offensive side?
Okay, so Caleros is not going to play. I'm saying it's going to be Matthews that starts the season as the quarterback if Caleros isn't healthy. As good as Mazzoli was, if Matthews doesn't get hurt, Mazzoli never sees the field. So I think Matthews will be given the shot in camp to start the season as the starter. He'll be a year older. He'll have more familiarity with the offense. I think he'll be a lot better. I think he's the guy that'll start a quarterback until Caleros is healthy. Then Gable, duh, obviously, he's going to be the starting running back. Offensive line-wise, this is tough because I said listed all those guys are going to be free agents, but Dykowski, Filer, and Bombin are all back next year, so they're going to be the starters in the middle. And yeah, I'm going to go with Olsen and Figueroa are re-signed, and they're the starters. Receiving, I'm going with Tasker, Tolliver, Sinkfield, Watt. Those are my four. And number five, I'm saying number 83 is coming back. I'm saying Andy Fantuz is back in black and gold next year. So defensively, who do you have defensively?
Well, I got Brian Hall in the middle, Laurent resign. Like, these are all, hopefully, if they resign. Hickman, Norwood on the outside there.
Do you think Norwood will be ready for the start of the season?
That's a good question.
The torn ACL, if Caleros is not going to be ready, I can't imagine Norwood's going to be ready.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, maybe put in maybe Troy Davis, who started, or... That's a tough one.
It's tough, right? It's tough.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah. And then linebacker, you know, I think Taylor Reed's a free agent, right?
He is. This is really difficult just because of all the free agents they have out there.
So Lawrence Reed, Harris, he's a free agent as well.
Yep.
Maybe we could do this a little bit later in the offseason for fun, but we'll do it again. Hopefully Stevens is back. Hopefully Davis is back. Butler, safety. Davis. Did I say Davis?
Yeah, you said Davis, okay. Steven, and Butler.
Yeah. God, I'm blanking on the guy who was in there earlier in the season that had such... Oh, Johnny Sears Jr.
Also a free agent.
I would say Donald Washington, but he got released, so... Oh, God, who am I forgetting here?
Brandon Stewart, but he's also a free agent. Like, you know what? Just doing this has made me realize that there are so many starters and, like, top backups that are free agents on this defense that... I honestly cannot come up – if I came up with a team, it would essentially be a lot like the team we already have, and that would be me guessing that they're going to be able to re-sign all these guys, and I don't think they will. The only guy that I can think of that will start in place of Norwood is Adrian Tracy.
Yeah.
And if he comes back healthy, I think he's the guy that would start in place of Norwood. But, yeah, like, holy crap. I was sitting here while you were talking. I was listening to you, and I was trying to come up with my own team, and it's just like I had a guy written down. Nope, he's a free agent. Had a guy – nope, he's free – there's just so many bloody free agents. Like, who the heck knows who's going to be back here next year?
Yeah, and we did it one of our first episodes. We, you know, predicted the starting lineups. That was closer to the season. So we will get back to that as the offseason goes along and we get closer to the 2016 season to have a more educated depth chart ready.
Yeah, I think we did it twice. I think we did it just prior to the start of free agency when we had seen a bunch of guys resign, so we had a lot better idea of who would be here. And then we guessed on some, maybe some free agents they would bring in. I think both of us, I think you had Stanley Bryant coming in as a free agent, and
yeah.
I think I had a couple of guys being brought in. And then we did it like at near the start of the season, like just started going into training camp or maybe just after training. I can't remember when it was, but we did it again. Now the team's here and the free agents had happened. And yeah, I just looking at the number of guys, there's so much uncertainty into who will re-sign and can they re-sign them. And that's it almost makes this impossible to do.
For sure. It's tough.
We'll call this one incomplete, but we'll save this question. And maybe we will, maybe when we get back together and do our little, like we did last year, we did that free agent preview show. Maybe then we'll hopefully 2 months later, we'll have a little bit better idea and we can tackle this question once more.
That sounds good to me.
All right, so that's all I got. So that's the end of the show. One more time, just like I did last week, I want to remind anyone out there who's going to Winnipeg for the Grey Cup this weekend that there is a great event. The CFL Fans Fight Cancer event is taking place at Garbanzo Pizza Pub on Saturday from 11 to 2. Chris Walby will be there. I've been told that there are going to be other ex-CFL players there. It's free of charge. There's raffles and prizes and all sorts of things that you can get into. It's in the middle of the day, so it's not too much of a time commitment. It, like I said last week, if I was going to Grey Cup, I'd be heading to this event. So hopefully anyone out there who's hemming and hawing about it gets their butt down to Garbanzo's Pizza Pub on Saturday and supports a really good cause. Don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you want to have a question answered, I believe next week will probably be our last show of the year. So if you got any last-minute questions you want Mike or myself to answer, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, give them your Twitter handle.
Mike_Ticats.
I'm Josh_Smith_82. And as always, throw some questions in the comment section of 3 Down Nation, and we will get to those as well. Try not to make us look too far in the future, though, because apparently we're not very good at that. So for Podski Wee Wee this week, I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.